shit show. It's a fucking shit show.
Welcome back to Shit Show. Saturday, folks. How's it going? So today I am chatting with three fellow shit shows who are sharing their experience of experiencing the impact of and the healing from narcissistic abuse. So as I've shared before, within this shit show community, we have a variety of these subtopics. So I want to start highlighting these specific groups so that you guys can see what we're offering here in the shit show community. So I'm chatting with three members of the Healing from Narcissists subcommunity who are sharing their experience with, the impact of, and the healing from narcissistic abuse. I would just like to point out that this is why this community is so fucking valuable, folks, because not only do we have this experience of being adult children, underneath this umbrella, we have all these various facets that some of us have experienced and others have not. And not only is it important to connect with people who are adult children, it's also important for us to connect with the people who have, you know, our more specific experiences as well. So again, I'm going to run through these subtopics so you have an idea of what you're missing out on in this damn community. So we have shit show dudes. We have people who work in healthcare, childhood sexual abuse survivors, psychedelics and shit. We have shit show hormones are whack. We have shit show parenting, healing from narcissists, a divorce and separation group. We have neurodivergence. We have sober support. So again, what the hell are you waiting for? What the hell are you doing not joining this damn shit show, folks? Come on. Hop aboard. Oh, and I'm going to be starting a new one. We had another request for one that is a more specific dual diagnosis group. So those suffering from mental illnesses such as bipolar, etc. So how about you stop piddling around, twiddling your thumbs, and take that thumb of yours right now and scroll down into the show notes and click that link, folks. Let's click that link. And damn the joint. Please also subscribe to my newsletter. Please also follow me on the Insta and the TikTok at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, could you please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify? You guys have been slacking lately. Please and thank you. I hope you have a wonderful weekend and I love you all.
They say that I should damn the joint shit show. They say that that's where people go to heal. They say that I'll feel seen and heard like I have never felt before. So I'm going to damn the joint right now.
Okay, why don't we go around and each say who the narcissist was in your life and what type of narcissism... and how you came to understand that that is what was going on. So whoever wants to start, how about it?
I could start. Okay. My, this is hindsight. I really didn't know it at the time. Like, I didn't understand the word, but my dad was, I would say, a malignant narcissist. He was at least alcoholic and he was violent, like physically, verbally violent. And then I probably like dated a list of narcissists and then I married one. And he was so covert and not an alcoholic that it took me until COVID to realize it. So we were married for 15 years.
What is the defining characteristic that makes one a malignant narcissist versus covert?
So, malignant is where they really go out and hurt people. Like their intention is to hurt people. Yeah. And they don't care. They don't, like, it's all about them and their need to hurt people. Not that I'm an expert. Like, I don't know specifically the definitions, but yeah.
We folks have heard me talk about it, my family, a few times. My family is filled with them. There's a deep history of mental health issues and narcissism on both sides of my family. I would say my mother was, I don't know, my mother kind of like, that the spectrum is cluster B spectrum is really fluid. I'd say my mother probably started out as borderline and then moved further down the spectrum. And she was, by the end of her life, she was as well. My father, I described as grandiose, but honestly, I think my father was much closer to like psychopathy. His mother had was obsessive compulsive, at the very least, and was really severe, serious mental health issues. And he would, I like, he could have been Jeffrey Dahmer. He could have been. It just sort of like circumstances, societal stuff, etc. Kind of, he didn't go that far. And then my brother too. My brother, I think, is covert. I kind of find out. I found out all at once. I think I talked about this in my own interview, but my marriage broke up about 12 years ago. I started to look at my life. I got an ADHD diagnosis, and I started researching, like everybody else, right? I started researching narcissism and discovering it. It really flipped for me when I started taking an ADHD medication about 7 years ago, when I could have clarity and there was some, I was able to use both sides of my brain and they were connected. And it was really, I just kind of like, I remember waking up from a nap one afternoon and going, oh my God, I was the scapegoat. Like I was the trash bin for everybody to dump on, the sensitive one. So that's the short version.
I just wanted to add that I had a very similar experience. I kind of
Oh
realized
yeah.
everything when I got treatment for ADHD.
Well, it's interesting how that is a kind of like a stepping stone or a shift. It was like a light went on, and it was like, oh, this isn't normal. Like what I experienced wasn't normal. Like this, and that the box that I felt like I've been in all my whole life was constructed without my even knowing.
Yeah, it's
What did
literally
you?
like waking up. For me, it was slowing my thoughts down enough for me to catch them and process them and the feelings that came with them. And I was living with a narcissist at the time, and their one of their goals is to just exhaust you and distract you. And that was harder to do once I got treatment for ADHD.
Yeah.
So my father was, or is, I guess, a malignant narcissist. He believed very deeply that he was very special, like so special. And everybody needed to reinforce that at all times. I mean, it would be demanded, it would be required to pay compliments and to repeatedly build him up. We pretty much existed to glorify him. We were not individual humans with needs. We were there to serve a purpose, which was to make him look good at all times and in all things. And he was very, I would say, sadistic in his, I'm going to use quote, punishment strategies. From the outside, we looked like the perfect little, two kids family, because everything was disguised as discipline, teaching us a lesson. But his lessons were very cruel and very harsh, and he was just a rager. He did not drink, he did not have an addiction. He saw that as weakness, and so he kind of had this really better than everyone mentality, and he looked down on anyone who drank or smoked cigarettes or lived in an apartment or just anything that was beneath what he thought was his status in life was just lesser than. And deeply racist, just a very cruel, miserable person who you could never satisfy. You could never do enough. You could never praise enough. You could never be good enough or right enough. It was just, he was never happy. It was never enough because he didn't feel special. And as far as when I really recognized it, I think it was probably when I started with my current therapist, which has been 6.5 years ago. He was the first person who used the words trauma. And I kept going, no, I just had a really complicated relationship with my dad. I just kept like brushing it off because I'd been brainwashed to believe that I was lucky to have that kind of structure. And I was lucky to have someone who loved me enough to teach me. And so I think it was really when I got into my current therapy arrangement is when it all, like the CPTSD and the narcissism and the trauma, all of those terms really started clicking and making sense. And I'd say it was pretty sudden understanding.
I'd love for you guys to speak upon what is the, like, specifically, what sort of an impact has that had on your life as an adult? Like, the actual having some a parent that was narcissistic, as opposed to like the normal stuff that, that we ingrain as a result of growing up in a dysfunctional family and experiencing, emotional neglect, all of those things. But can you see specifically the ways in which that has shaped your life? Like, as an adult, specifically related to the narcissistic abuse that you endured.
I'm not sure, if this is specific to narcissistic abuse, but because your whole family structure revolves around holding this person's ego up, there is no chance. And I know this is in like all adult children, but there's no chance to develop a sense of self. Like, you all fall in line, your personality falls in line with just trying to build that person up so that they don't have the next rage out or breakdown or abusive episode. And I'll have to think about how else that affected me. That's a big one.
I relate to that a lot. I think it's generally just instilled in me a fear of people, a mistrust, an inability, especially with men. That has really been a problem area for me because I do tend to seek out somehow relationships that are similar. I don't think I've dated another malignant narcissist, but I've dated like the covert, the ones that are harder to see because it felt somehow normal. So it's made it really hard for me to trust. I have a major fawn response when faced with the rage from a narcissist, which has really caused problems. I mean, even recently in my life with work and relationships. So yeah, it's but I think like Faith said, there really was no chance to focus on yourself or your own needs. It was just all your energy was either trying to stay safe from the rage or trying to make the narcissist happy. Try to get them out of their funk, try to make them feel, praised enough. And when you were so exhausted, like you had nothing else to give for yourself or anything else. It drained you.
And not everybody is all bad all the time, right? So they, when things are really good, they're really good. And as that child, like, you just go looking for, and you're like addicted to that praise that you would get. And that carried into my adult relationships too.
And then you get sucker punched.
Yes.
And
Over and over.
then there's collapse. I'm coping now with a relationship that ended over a year, like about a year and a half ago. And a normal thing to do when you go through a breakup of any kind is to say, what's my responsibility in it? What are my patterns, right? And admitting to and saying it out in the world, that, oh, I have this habit, addiction, pattern of relationships with women who are borderline or, or somewhere on the cluster B spectrum. Another big thing for me is like not proving anything to myself, but saying, I know this. I know this my whole, I've seen this person, now I see it. Or I did all along and I had blinders on, and because safety was like primary for me, and I asked for that over and over again, and I did whatever I had to the point of exhaustion. And then it just like in this particular relationship, she just blew up at me at one point, and like it's like for me, it was like, okay, that's it. We're done. Done. Close door. Fuck off. Get out. Right. And then she goes out. She's out there in my community, like trashing me. He said this, he did that. And I feel it when I'm walking, like I walk in a room with like with common people. And it's like, no, you don't understand. It's again, it's like a trap. It's part of the, it's sort of that part of the trap. It's really, really hard.
I had to go so far as to block anybody that would come into contact with my ex, except my kids.
Oh, that's good. That's nice of you.
Yeah.
I left my family, my religion, most of the people I knew because they were so closely aligned. I mean, I went total scorched earth when I finally got the courage and got the clear picture. It's like, Todd was saying, once you see it, you cannot unsee it. And to me, everything was just so entwined. The faith, the patriarchy, the control, the rage. I left it all. I left it all.
So did I. I've been dropping friends now for, or friends now for a few years. So yeah, I can definitely relate, Laura. It's really hard. How hard that is.
I was going to ask you, Faith, is like being a mom and having their dad be a narcissist, and how have you navigated that, like as you've learned more, as you see the way in which he interacts with them, like is that something that you've thought a lot about, talked about in therapy as far to how to
Goodness,
co
yeah.
combat and I don't want to say like reverse,
Right.
damage, but
It's
how have you integrated that into your process as a mother?
not that you can combat it just because of the personality, like they cannot help themselves. Like they're going to try to alienate me from my kids, thinking that they're being attacked. And that I'm spreading lies about them or him, and he wants to put a narrative into my kid's head. And at first, Todd, like you were saying, I was like, that is not true. I did not do that. I did not say that. Like, where are you guys getting this? Why on earth would he say that? And what that did was put my kids right in the middle of it, because then they would go back to him and be like, well, she said that's not true, and she said this is a liar, mom said this. And it was and still is really affecting my kids. And I had gone through some coaching and some classes on high conflict divorce. I had 2 years of intensive IFS therapy, and finally, like it seems like so recently, like that I was able to like just let it go, just let him say what he's gonna say, tell my kids that I don't want to hear what he has to say about me, that that's not important to me, and then just support them the best way I can. If something he does upsets them, I just validate their feelings, or if he says something bad about me, I'm like, I'm really sorry he feels that way. But I try very hard to validate their feelings and just let them know they have every right to be angry, stressed, anxious, and feel any sort of way about it. I can't do anything about their relationship with their dad anymore. So they're teenagers. And like they have to figure out how to navigate this. And like one of the biggest things was letting that go, because I'm a recovering helicopter mom. Like, I was the codependent, like, and the enabler, and I would go around and try to smooth things over. And I, if they fell down, I would literally pick them back up. Like, so it took me a while to actually just let that go and let them navigate their relationship with him and just give them the best shot that I can for having a relationship with their dad, and then worry about what I've done and focus on repairing my relationship with them, because I am absolutely not without responsibility in their trauma.
And through you doing that, there have been some pivotal shifts,
yeah,
which I would love for you to touch upon. And I think that this also was another thing that I wanted to ask about too, as far as, you know, like, I was, you know, scapegoated. I'm an only child, obviously, but there's something different about becoming the scapegoat in a narcissistic family. And there really is like the golden child and the, you know, in a scapegoat that is very deliberately chosen. But I know, Faith, what was going on with you was, for a while, it was like, you know, like one daughter was team mom, the other one was team dad, and that through your change of completely shifting away from trying to combat what he was saying and really focusing on taking responsibility for your role in things, that there's been some huge shifts there. So I'd love for you to touch upon that.
Yes. Yeah. So, this was causing, my kids are 18 months apart, and so they were always very close, but, exactly what you said happened, where, he created a divide, and that's kind of what a narcissist does, is create a divide and play people off of each other. So just taking myself out of that conflict, and when, especially my youngest would express anger towards me and was like team dad and is still really on board with things that dad says, just by my young, I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. I'm sorry, and like be concise, but
you're doing great.
She would be yelling at me, and it would be like my ex's words, and just angry and anxious all the time. And eventually I started just saying, you know what? You have every right to be angry. Like, your anger is safe with me. Anger is not a bad feeling. And I know, like, I'm very sorry for all the ways that I couldn't show up. I understand why you're angry. You don't owe me anything. Just know that I'm sorry. Like, one of the best things I heard, and this sounds counterintuitive, was that your kids don't owe you anything. And for some reason, like, this brought me like a lot of comfort as a parent. Like, I was kind of able to let them be their own people, their own person, and decide how they feel about me. So they get to tell me like what kind of mom I was. So I just continue to tell them that. And it really has like taken a lot of pressure off the kids, like probably taken most of the pressure off the kids too.
Was there a real deliberate effort of him choosing like a scapegoat and a hero child, a golden child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So he had become abusive, and our oldest child like looks just like him and had, you know, kind of like some of his traits, and he really singled out our oldest child to be abusive towards. So with narcissism, what it really is they hate themselves, mm-hmm. and they don't want the whole world to know like what a terrible person they are, fraud that they are. So he really made our oldest like the scapegoat and the problem, you know, like our oldest was the whole problem, and our youngest still can do no wrong. So I've had a lot of talks with them about how they grew up with two sets of parents. And, you know, yeah, just acknowledging what happened to them, and they realize what happened to them too.
It's really huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was your experience, Todd, of like you were the scapegoat and your brother was more of the hero, right?
It's, I mean, we were both dumping grounds, but it takes, and I'm not bragging when I say this, the scapegoat is the smart one, the
The
sensitive
strong
one,
one.
the strong one, and the one with one
Truth-teller.
foot, and the one with one foot in the real world. And the one willing to say, and this is the hook, right? The one willing to say, I see that, and that's wrong. And I mean, you're serving it up on a platter for any a narcissistic parent when you do that, right? It's like, oh, you said this and this happened. What the fuck? Why is it, why didn't you fix it? And it's just like a perfect marriage as far as that goes. But this was a real turning point for me, like, because I only really started to accept the fact that my brother was narcissistic only maybe 3 years ago. My mother had died. He was my parents parentified us both, but my brother got pulled into the mom vortex most specifically, and he was the executor of her will, and I knew, like, early on, that he was manipulating the will and he was messing with the money and he was playing it right. He was doing everything, but he ended up keeping me at a distance and then, bringing me in when he needed to try and knock me off my game, etc. But for me, Faith, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but like reaching a place of acceptance of that, it was a release for me. I mean, I don't now, all that shit's done and settled, and I don't have anything to do with him anymore. And I never will, because he's never going to change. And the price I pay for that, I am paying for that, is I don't have a relationship with my nephews and my niece.
I can relate, Todd. I won't say I have no contact with my brother, but it's extremely minimal. And it's really only when he reaches out, and it's usually like a happy birthday text or a Merry Christmas text, which I will reply to. I have a nephew. My brother has a son. I have a relationship with my nephew because of his mother, who was never married to my brother. They had a relationship for a few years, and she finally had enough. But thanks to her, I do have a relationship with my nephew, and I'm so grateful for that. She is someone who welcomes that connection and encourages it. And I, not only do I love getting to be an aunt to him, but I love getting to represent a small sliver of that family that is not either self-destructing or trying to destroy others. So I do take that. That's the only blood relative that I have any real connection with. And it's like I said, it's only because his mom is so supportive of that. It's, yeah, there's so much loss that comes with
Oh, it's huge. I
when you
mean,
finally, yeah, when you've got that one foot out the door and then you realize you can go ahead and take the other steps. It's just, it's massive what you lose.
is. I mean, for me, with those, my nephews and niece, it's like, yeah, I sacrifice myself because I know that if I have any relationship with them, and I don't with their father, it's going to get back to him and he's going to make their lives miserable.
Exactly. And I do, yeah, I do walk that line really carefully. I'm very anxious when I go see them just because I
Yeah,
know that
sure.
because he sees my brother, he sees my
How old
dad.
is he?
13. So yeah, it's there's always fear, but that's the one place that I'm willing to at least step a little bit into that family connection just because of him, and he doesn't deserve to be, treated badly or ignored or whatever. But yeah, it's a real balancing act.
So, what is the benefit of being able to connect with others who have also experienced narcissistic abuse? And what is the importance and value in really being able to connect with people who have a shared experience? And have you felt invalidated talking to other people who perhaps don't fully understand it or don't have that experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the invalidation from outside is huge. But the group that we have here, the group that we formed, I just realized my power's about to go out. It's enormous having the support of people who have experienced it. I mean, just all the nodding along that we do, you know, in the meetings, like, yeah, that being seen, being known, it's just huge, because you do kind of go through life feeling like there's just something wrong with me. I can't relate well to people, and I'm always afraid, and you internalize it all. But a space like this, you know, that we have, it's just so validating and so enriching, and it feels safe for the first time. Yeah. I feel like I'm around safe people, you know, and that is just enormous for me. I think this has been a very big step forward for me, being able to come into a space and feel safe, feel like I can open up and feel like I can be seen, and the ability to witness others. You know, I really have learned just how sacred that is, to hold space for other people, you know, and to know what they are going through or what they're feeling. And it's a huge, huge part of healing for me.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. This space was like immediately safe, and people like not in recovery, not doing the work, they will say things that are not intentionally invalidating, like, but that's your family, or that's your kid's dad. And here people know to listen. People know what you're talking about. They know what you've been through. Like, they understand the highs and lows.
I go back to that boof word again. And constantly, I mean, I grew up doing, you unconsciously grow up doing that. I think all of us, and that's over-explaining, wanting people to understand, trying to bring somebody in that will hold us and hold space for us or with us, that can acknowledge that A, that we exist, and B, that our, you know, that what we're feeling is real. This is something that I went through, and it was a really harsh lesson to learn when in this last relationship I was talking about. So I was going through all this stuff with my brother and my mother during the pandemic. And it was really raw, always present. And I was processing a shit ton. And I was trying to be cognizant of that with this person that I was with. And she kept invalidating it. She kept saying, oh, no, that's not, yeah, like, so yes, what you two were explaining. And it's like, at first it was like, what the fuck? And then, you know, as I went along, I kind of realized that what she was trying to do was keep me in the trance. It was just exhausting. So yes, this space is so incredibly important. Like this conversation we're having right now, like that you've brought us together, Andrea, it's like, yeah, we're just talking shop, and we're sharing our experience, and that's the way it's supposed to be. That's normal. Mm-hmm. So appreciate it.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom, noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
My concern with the overuse of the term is that it's invalidating your guys' experience. Like, that's where my concern comes in. And maybe people don't, maybe you guys don't give a shit, but that's kind of like where my concern is that it is taking away from the experience of those who really have been subjected to this is kind of like what my concern is. But I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I think it's a valid concern. It's kind of like the word gaslighting, you know, that gets thrown around a lot. I think where I am learning to be, and this is just an ongoing lesson for me, is to worry less about what others think of me, how others perceive me, and to learn to be true to myself and what I know. Mm-hmm. And I know what I experience now, and I'm not in a place to be convinced otherwise. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an ongoing lesson. So yeah, it can feel overused or misused, but I think I'm just trying not to spend too much of my energy worrying about that and just trying to control what I can control, basically.
Mm-hmm. I actually have found, like, I just went through a court battle with my ex, and even in therapy, just saying they're a narcissist isn't incredibly useful. So like in court, you would need to prove patterns of behavior. So you have to describe what they're doing, whether you put a label on it or not. And also in therapy, like focusing on how specific behaviors and attitudes affect you. So just, I mean, I do worry a little bit that when somebody hears narcissistic personality disorder, that they're going to go, oh, again, you know, but just in my life, I didn't find it super useful because I wanted to go through and address the different behaviors and what I experienced.
I mean, I work in media. There's always been that part of me too, which comes in handy, which is like, I don't give a fuck what you think. And so that is not necessarily true, but it's a really important, it's I'm sure we'll touch on this anyway, but it's been really, really important as I go through this to be able to look at myself in the mirror and look at my own contribution to this. And Faith, you talked about this some too, right? About being the codependent one, about what it is that you're looking for out of a relationship, and why, you know, why you as a person are keep being attracted to and folks that are narcissistic. And because I know this and because I'm getting to know myself through this, the outside world, you know, picking a new phrase or, you know, narcs of the new style kind of thing, whatever. Like, it's just, there's more important things to be done. And it's because finding your own truth and finding out who you really are and actually being able to be that in the world, it trumps everything else, as hard as it is.
Mm-hmm. So that's a beautiful segue, Todd, because it's like balancing, like, your experiences are valid. You have every reason to be pissed off, hurt, to have no contact, but it's the fine balance of like allowing yourself to have those feelings, but then focusing on, okay, like what are the aspects, traits, beliefs, behaviors within myself that have allowed me to get into these circumstances? And how do I address those things? So I'm curious Faith, you touched upon it a bunch, but whoever wants to chime in on that.
I've spent the last couple of years just figuring out who I am. And this is all like brand new, honestly, because I never had a chance to really develop and get to know who I am. I have specifically stayed single. I've come to the realization that I have never been attracted to a healthy person. Like, that was boring, right? Like, there's nothing attractive about that. And I have, for the first time, like, spent a lot of time alone, but like, not at all lonely, like, so happy in being with myself that I'm just so grateful for this journey and like that I was exposed to all of that and that I have a tribe who understands. And like, it's been wonderful. Like, I've been able to really sit with my feelings, really understand my responsibility in it. And I'll just be forever grateful.
I similarly, Faith, I have purposefully taken myself out of dating for probably a year and a half now, even after I had several years of therapy under my belt. And I thought, got it now. I know what to look for. I know my boundaries. And I still kept falling into very familiar red flag situations. And it just finally occurred to me that until you get this relationship with self fully developed and just it's just not worth it. It's just not worth wasting the energy and the effort trying to find someone, because somewhere in me, I'm a deeply codependent person as well. Somewhere in me, it's like that belief that I need someone, to complete me kind of thing. And that is just simply not the truth. I need me to complete me. And that's the journey that I'm on. And I'm not focusing on anything outside of that, really. So that's my big healthy step, I think, in that way.
I went through a phase after I broke up with the one I was talking about. I went through a phase of I jumped back on Bumble, right? And it's like, and I started to do that, and it was weird because it's the second time I've been on Bumble over the last few years, and women that I'd been communicating with the first time I was on Bumble started popping up again. It was like, what the? And so I responded, and I actually asked a couple of them, why are you back around again? And sometimes they would just like they would ghost me. Sometimes they would we I like I went out on one or two dates with one of them and one or two of them, and it was like, oh, okay. Now I understand.
Hey, they'd be like, "Why are you back on here too, buddy? Who
Yeah.
the
Well,
fuck
yeah,
you?"
it's right. It's like, oh, okay, right. I was, yeah, never mind. And that kind of, and I kind of, that broke me of that habit. And I want to say that I'm happy that that's the case. Like you two have, but I'm not there yet. I feel like I'm just, over the last few months, I've just been getting back up on my feet, recovering from the collapse I had last time. And but that's being said, that's still enough. It's enough right now. And again, like having this community is like huge.
Last question would be, how important has it been for you to become educated on the topic? And are there any particular resources or communication tools or something that you've found particularly helpful in dealing with the narcissist in your life?
I have found oh gosh, what is it called? The High Conflict Co-Parenting Podcast. They do online courses,
I should get
and
them on the podcast. That
yes.
would be a
So
funny. I
it's
need to do a topic.
High Conflict Co-Parenting Podcast.
Continue, sorry.
And there's another podcast I listen to called It's All Your Fault, dealing with high conflict people. And both of those podcasts, they have like their own institute. They work with parents. They do like divorce coaching. And from them, combined with IFS therapy, have taught like the BIF method, and
Biff.
when responding BIF, yeah, like brief and informative, brief informative. Oh. Uh-oh.
Is it factual?
That's it. Factual and like friendly or professional. He specifically told me, like, when I respond to my ex, keep it like picture a post-it note and keep it that short. If what you wrote would fit in a post-it note, then you're good. Then you can send it. I'm trying to think. I might think of more, but I listened to also Caroline Strawson. She is from the UK, and she's the one who actually, through listening to her podcast, I heard about IFS, and like calming the nervous system and like the vasovagal theory, which was really important for my healing too.
Okay, I'll go. Like everything else in my life, I'm largely self-taught. And this is a bit of a criticism, I suppose, of the therapeutic community, in that there's a shockingly small amount still of there's a huge lack, a huge gap in turn in the knowledge gap in terms of where this understanding of this all of this is. And I know it's early days and it's starting to coming around, but I happened to discover by chance Sam Vaknin's book, well, the YouTube expert on narcissistic personality disorder. He's still pretty prominent on YouTube. He invented words like, or created words like hoovering. Practitioners like Patrick Tian. I don't know if you have you interviewed him? Have you? Okay. I couldn't
I need
remember.
them back on now. It was about a year ago.
Yeah, he's great. I really like him because he's very real and he's walked the walk. That is a huge thing that I'm discovering because I'm in the process of looking for a therapist myself. I'm still learning. I'm learning to let go of the need to control everything. So tools, again, and like really simple ones, like when you're describing Biff earlier, I learned how to practice gray rocking, right? Same sort of thing, right? Oh, hi, how are you? Have a nice day. See you later. And I just wish more therapists would realize that a weekend training session so they can get a couple of credits is actually probably more damaging than it is helpful if you're actually going to try and practice it at that point. Like, yeah. So anyway.
I think I lucked out in my therapist, and it was an assignment. I get my therapy through a nonprofit organization because I don't have insurance. And I had no input on the therapist that I would get. But man, did I luck out. I mean, this person is trauma informed, gentle, kind, patient, non-threatening, you know, just the perfect kind of guide to lead me into the self-education that has come as a result of that. And yeah, I can be a voracious reader and listener of topics. I know recently some folks in the group have introduced me to Tim Fletcher, who I had no familiarity with. And he does a lot of really incredible series on complex trauma and narcissism and shame and all those, how they relate. And just kind of as a funny side note, when I first looked him up, it mentioned like he was a pastor or a former pastor. So I was like, I'm out, you know, I don't do that messaging. But what I've learned is his videos, there's actually like a pause. He'll do 45 minutes on the topic at hand, and then there'll be like, and now for the Christian aspect. And I'm like, cool, I can check out now. And he has said a lot of things recently that have helped me kind of put some puzzle pieces together. Another podcast that I really enjoy is Dr. Romani, Navigating Narcissism. She has some really helpful insights,
She's good.
where she interviews folks that have been through, you know, really extreme narcissistic situations. So I appreciate personal stories and recovery, not just my life was so awful and in the
Talk to the
end,
person.
and it's never going to get any better. But yeah, I like the personal stories or the way you can really relate it and see it more simply. I'm so grateful to have found a group that's willing to do that work with me.
I just wanted to add that this growth has caused a lot of self-forgiveness too, for, you know, ways I came up short and fell into this and for my past. And it's allowed me forgiveness of my parents too. And it's just been really helpful. And I really appreciate being able to hear everybody else's story. I really appreciate this community.
Let it all go.